Okay, ready? Okay. I want to thank Barry Miller for being here. This is, I view this as sort of my rabbinic internship. I'm here, I get to, Barry Miller was kind enough to let me sit up here and be the rabbi, and this way he would supervise me, and I would learn to improve my shiur giving skills. So, some of the questions here. Going to the hospital, giving birth on Shabbos. And also, I definitely, you know, want to encourage participation. I'm sure there are details that maybe weren't thought of that might come up. And certainly in terms of the metzias, having never given birth, although so too for some of the women here as well as all the men, I'm not going to be as familiar with all the different practical necessities and needs and factors. So feel free to shout out. Okay, number one, if you go to the hospital and it ends up being a false alarm, can you travel home on Shabbos in a car? So you go to, I guess this is a more common thing when people are, especially first giving birth, right? Always better be on the safe side. Go to the hospital and they send you home. So there's no heter to drive home or to have a Jewish cabbie drive you home on Shabbos because not the case of sakana. So it's not a case of sakana. There's definitely no heter. Definitely no heter to drive home. If, generally we would say, if you go to the hospital and it's a false alarm, then stay in the hospital or, you know, go to friends or, you know, or neighbors or whatever who live near the hospital to hang out for the rest of Shabbos. The Torah Siyoledis and some of the other Manan Yalachas firms say that there is one category of heter that we didn't discuss this morning, for those who are in my shir, which is that Amir La'akum is mutter for tzorech choleh. So, the sperm say that if you go to the hospital, false alarm, and you can stay in the hospital, or stay in the neighborhood of the hospital, then great. If, it might depend what time it is, if, let's say, it's Friday night, and the whole hospital, and they don't have any place for you to stay, and you know, and it's exceedingly physically difficult for the future Yoledis, and then it could be considered like a tzorech chola, you know, if you're about to give birth, then you're not in sakana, but you could still be a chola, and if there's no place to rest all Shabbos, then that could be a matir for Amir La'akum, so it could be that if you can get a guy to, the Torah Yoledis says, if you can get a guy to drive you home without you needing to do any malacha, he'll open the door and he'll close the door and do everything, and all you have to do is sit around, and you know, the somehow he won't charge you money or whatever, you have some way to work it out with him. Then theoretically, if it's very difficult for the Oledis, who's a chole, and there's a long time till the end of Shabbos, you can be makel on Amir La'akum. You have to be careful, because often when you go in a car, you have to know that you're going to remember not to do malachos yourself. But certainly there's no heter for a Jew to drive you home, because not sakana. I mean, as long as you're in the hospital, it can't possibly be sakana that you have to leave the hospital. Number two, can you call your doula on Shabbos, or for those of us who are more old-fashioned, your doctor, or whatever, if you're not positive that your wife is in labor? So I think the answer is pashut yes. The general rule of pikuach nefesh is, you know, it's one thing if you're discussing, you know, can I bring my this, can I bring my that, things that are clearly not pikuach nefesh. But when it comes to, like, getting to the hospital on time, that clearly is pikuach nefesh. And the rule of pikuach nefesh is that you don't ask too many questions, you don't second-guess yourself. If it might, if you're positive your wife's not in labor, then you shouldn't call anyone. But if you're not positive, that's a suffik pikuach nefesh, and you should certainly call someone right away, and they'll tell you if you're in labor or not. Number three, who can come in the car to go to the hospital on Shabbos? So, there's Rav Moshe about this, as well as, you know, many other poskim. And the general assumption is that, you know, the basic support staff for the Oledis can accompany them to the hospital on Shabbos. There are two reasons for this. Number one, because we assume that, you know, psychological stability of a cholish ishva sakana or yoledes is also considered pikuach nefesh, and you know, someone's going to be alone in this strange hospital and have no one to advocate for her. First of all, you know, even though maternity wards, davka, you know, unlike in the rest of the hospital, if someone's with sakana and they have no one, like, to, you know, push their case to advocate for them, then it's mamish sakana. In the maternity ward, generally, they take care of you regardless. But still, it could be very difficult and can make the sakana more. And especially, Ramosha says at the end of his tshuva on this, if I recall correctly, that it's not really a malacha for another person to go in the car. If I call a cab on Shabbos, and instead of only the wife going in, the wife and the husband goes in, then the husband's not, it's not any malacha to sit in a car, at least if it doesn't go go outside of tchum, which usually people don't go outside of tchum to the hospital. It depends where you're coming from. But certainly, if it's usually not any malacha, and even if it is malacha, if it's, you know, like most people, it's very difficult for them to go on their own, then even if it might be, you know, a shayla of, you know, of a tchum of 2,000 amos or something, then we say that you can accompany your wife to the hospital on Shabbos. So generally, you know, so pretty much all situations, the husband can go with his wife to the hospital on Shabbos. Four. What are the proper procedures if the hospital is not in an Erev? Okay, let me save that for the other one about carrying things. Let's first stick with people, and then we'll get back to things. The other shot is about people. What's the best way to get to the hospital on Shabbos in Israel and in Chutz Laaretz? Arab cabbie, Jewish cabbie, drive yourself. I think those are the, you know, so, okay, so some of the Sfarim point out that if you have rickshaws available, then that might be preferable, but in the countries where we live, that generally doesn't come up. So this is part of a general question which comes up a little later. Is it best to minimize the malachas that you do, or once it's pikuach nefesh, everything is mutter? This is actually a big sugya, although by let it's not quite as big, but in general pikuach nefesh, a big sugya in the Rishonim and the Poskim, but we hold, in general, certainly by Yoledes and even by all Cholashif Sakanas, we hold that it is best to minimize the malacha done, right? Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos is dechuya, not hutra. It's not like Heter Gomer that it's not Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh. It's just that the mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh outweighs Shabbos. But if you can, you know, save the Yoledes and the Vlad, without Chilul Shabbos, or with less Chilul Shabbos, then you have to try to minimize the Chilul Shabbos. That's there are Ma Paskins by all Cholim. If you can get a guy to do something, you have to get a guy to do it. If you can do something with a Shinoi, you have to do it with a Shinoi. But there's one very important condition. That is only if it won't cause a delay. So in all these cases, if it won't cause a delay, then you have to try to minimize the Chilul Shabbos. But if it will cause a delay, then you have to rush and, you know, and get to the hospital as soon as possible. For example, how should you get to the hospital? So, the answer is in a way that won't cause. So, if it's more or less, you know, take you more or less the same amount of time, or you're not in a particular rush, you know, you have time till, you know, based on what you learned, you know, every minute is not of the essence, or it's all the same either way, then the best thing is to get a guy to take you. The best thing is to get a guy to take you for two reasons. Number one, because it's best to minimize Chol Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh. Number two, then you don't have to worry about doing other things that are not necessarily Pikuach Nefesh that he might do. It just, you know, takes away a lot of technical problems. So the best way is to get a guy to take you. I assume in America a goyish cab is easier to find. In Israel, I'm not sure what the metzias is. Some people tell me, no, there's a special way to order a goyish cab on Shabbos to go to the hospital. Other people tell me that it doesn't really work. I don't know if anyone's actually tried it, had experience. So, so if you can, you know, if you have people who know things about how Yerushalayim works, which I don't, and you have the number of a goyish cab company, then call the goyish cab if he can come. But if the goyish cab says, no, I can't come right away, or you can't get through to the goyish cab company, then call a Jewish cab company, because you don't want to delay. So the goyish car says, oh, well, we're busy now, we'll send you someone in 40 minutes. Then call the Jewish cab company, and they'll send you someone in 5 minutes, hopefully. That's fine. It doesn't matter who owns the cab company. It matters who's doing the malach. I mean, okay, theoretically, should the Jew be owning the cab company, but, you know, we don't have to worry about that in this situation. Not to mention the fact, I don't think people really, like,
I mean, I guess you could ask who's answering the phone in the cab company, but even so, since answering the phone is pashut, it's not malacha d'oraisa, so and it's not something you're going to be have to worry about on the way there. It's much better to have a guy. So if you can get a guy to drive you, gevaldik. If you can't get a guy to drive you, or if the guy would be a delay, you know, the kind of delay people consider a delay. Sometimes every minute is a delay, but all the time, you know, if he's going to come half an hour later, that's a delay.
Firstly, there's an organization in Yerushalayim called Ezer Mitzion. They have a non-Jew on call, so they have, there's a number you can call on Shabbos. Again, there are a lot of women who call, so you have to, you know, it's hot luck as to whether that will work. But it's also, you can generally call a cab company like Moniot Beit Hakerem before Shabbos and say you'd like a non-Jewish driver to take you on Shabbos, and then they'll say, fine, just when you call, ask for a non-Jewish driver, and that you can do that.
Okay. So there are ways to, again, there's no guarantee, but there are ways to try to get a non-Jewish driver on Shabbos. Of course, to start looking for ways to get a non-Jewish driver, that's already too much of a delay. This is all if you're prepared in advance. If you're not prepared in advance, and to go waking up your neighbors trying to find how to get a non-Jewish driver, that's too much of a delay. Okay, so what about paying the cab driver? Let me just point out, I guess, one other question. The question is, should you get a Jewish cabbie, or should you drive yourself? If you have a car, which most people here don't, but someday we probably will. So again, if time is of the essence, if you can't get a cab, then of course you have to drive yourself, or if the cab won't come for a long time, or every minute is of the essence, then you have to do whatever you need to do. But in general, whether you should get a chiloni cab driver or drive yourself, so theoretically we know this, the famous machlokesh, well, Shlomo Zalman has his unique shita, although it's very accepted in Eretz Yisrael, that Pikuach Nefesh should only be done by Frum Jews and not by Chilonim, because Chilonim maybe don't really have a heter or a full heter of Pikuach Nefesh. And in America, the minhag is not that way. In America, the minhag is that it's, you know, all the same, and if it's more convenient for you, have Pikuach Nefesh done by a non-Frum Jew and make it more convenient for yourself. But in any case, in these cases, meaning whether to call a Chiloni cabbie, or to drive yourself, if time is not of the essence, then I think Kuli Alma would admit here, better to call a non-firm cab driver, even if, according to Shlomo Zalman, maybe he wouldn't have the full hetzer pikuach nefesh, than to drive yourself. So if you drive yourself, you just get into too many technical problems. What do you do with the car when you get there? And you have all these sort of side issues that come up, which make it definitely not the preferable option. So if you have time, definitely better to get a chiloni cab driver, practically, than to drive yourself. Because then you just don't have to worry about all these side problems like parking the car and all these other things. So, you know, driving yourself, if time is not of the essence, is third. Arab cabbie is first, Jewish cabbie is second, and driving yourself is third. And driving yourself is third if time is not of the essence. Paying the cab driver. So some of these places, if you're, whatever, you're Zocha and you have it all worked out with these proper organizations, they can, you know, work it out that you can pay after Shabbos, before Shabbos, whatever, you can try to work it out. What are the options practically?
You can, when you can call in advance, say where you are, and say how much money should I prepare for that.
Okay. So the best thing is, you know, so you have to, generally, I mean, you have to pay the cab. The cabbies aren't going to take you out of the goodness of their heart. So the best thing is to not have to carry the money. The best thing is to, you know, some idea, maybe you could call in advance and find out around how much money it is. You leave it, you know, right by the door on Friday, and you ask the cabbie if he can come in and get the money. If the cabbie can't come in and get the money, you know, the cabbie doesn't have to be so nice. He's like, what do you mean? It's my job to drive, it's your job to bring me the money. So if you, you know, if you have to bring the cabbie the money, or if it's a big rush and you can't afford to waste any time, especially if you're far away, and, you know, I think, you know, especially if you're far away, if you're up a few flights of stairs, then I think it's obvious that the cabbie's not going to be a triach himself. I don't think any cabbies are that nice. Then you should also prepare the money there so you don't start looking for your wallet, and you should try to carry the money out with a shinoi, because generally we assume that kilachar yad, a tilt of a gufo, we are makel, and that minimizes the isser. Of course, there's all, but if it's an emergency, then you just have to rush, and you don't have time to think about all these things. But in normal cases, you know, you don't have an hour to waste, but you have a few minutes to waste, and, you know, no one thinks twice about going to the bathroom first, or, you know, putting the milk in the fridge before you left. So you try to carry the money kalach or yad if you can, and if that's too hard, then just carry the money.
Is the shomer here on Shabbos permitted to open the gate? Like, just like it's a side question.
So is the shomer on Shabbos a Jew or a guy?
Sometimes.
Oh, that depends whether you're asking theoretically or practically.
We have heard, I think we were from the beginning of the year, that there was a specific shomer who Allah told us was not Jewish. He claims he is Jewish. I don't know what you want to do with anything that. Is that we were told he wasn't Jewish from Allah? He says he is. Okay, that's my focus of defining Jewishness, or what is it?
I mean, that happens a lot nowadays in Israel. So, I don't know, in terms of, you know, like all these things, it's whatever's necessary. So if the Yoledes is in good spirits and good condition and doesn't mind schlepping up a few flights of stairs or, you know, walking however it is that you go, then just wait on Zavdavani Street. But if, you know, if it's hard to walk up, I don't know, it's probably a big walk, then you can open the gate because that's what the cabbie has to do to pick you up. So it depends how, I guess, far advanced you are. So in all these things, you know, if you can avoid malacha, you know, without going through ridiculous effort, that's going to, you know, be bad for your health. But if you can avoid malacha, you should. And if you can't, then you should tell the guard, whatever exactly he is, to open the gate. The other question is, can you turn off the car if you drive yourself? This is the biggest problem about driving yourself. Is driving yourself is challenging. In some places where I live, everyone drives themselves because there aren't any cabbies. There are no chilonim, and there are goyim, but it's pikoch nefesh to go with them. So you have to drive yourself. So if you drive yourself, driving yourself is mutter. That's pikoch nefesh. Problem is, it's also to do extra things. So if you're driving yourself, the Shmir Shabbos Gachasa says very nicely. He says on the way there, theoretically, if you're a big expert in experience, you should do it in a way that minimizes all the speeding up and the slowing down, and you take into account what the light's going to be when you get there, and when you need your blinker, when you don't need your blinker, v'chule. But he says for most people, then if you do all this, you'll never get to the hospital, so you just have to drive regular. The problem is what to do once you get there. Once you get there. So getting there, the Shmir Shabbos makes sense. If you're not a big expert, then you have to drive regular, because otherwise you'll probably get into a crash if you try to get distracted when you're driving. Once you get there, though, then it's not pikuach nefesh at all anymore. So, I mean, you have to stop in front of the hospital, or you have to put your car in park. But once you're stopped and the car's in park and your wife's out of the car, so there's no pikuach nefesh at all now. Now it's just a matter of your car's in people's way. So if your car's where the ambulances have to come in, then maybe that's pikuach nefesh. But okay, fine. So you move your car to where the ambulances are. Maybe you can even push it. So then the problem is, what do you do with your car once you get there? That is very tricky, what to do with your car once you get there. And there are two issues. One is turning the car off. So turning the car off, you know, often you can definitely get a guide to turn the car off. I assume that turning the car off is a malacha d'rabbanan. I'll be pashtus that the ikar, we assume electricity is d'rabbanan, and when you turn off all the electric lights, it doesn't make any charcoal. And I think, I'm not a mechanic or an engineer, I think when you turn off the engine, it doesn't improve the gas. So it's a malacha d'rabbanan. So I'll be pashtus, you can get a guide to turn the car off, to sort of just turn the key and turn the car off, and that way no one will steal your car, to avoid a hefsek gadol. Al pi pashas, if we assume it's drabbanan, then between two svaras. Number one, turn the car off is pashas drabbanan. Drabbanan b'shinoi is mutter b'makom hefsed. Number two, some people say it could be sakana if you leave your car with the keys in the ignition, because kids could come and play in it, or it could accidentally run someone over. So, al pi pashas, if you don't have a guy, you could turn the ignition off yourself with a shinoi, if you can't find a guy to do it for you. The problem of parking the car is a different story. Actually, park the car, it depends how you park your car. If you park your car by pushing it, then... but that's, you know, it's always easier said than done. You can never really... I don't know, it never really works as well as you think. So if you can park your car by pushing it, that might be mutter legamrei. The Shirin Shav assumes that it's mutter to move it letzorach makomo. So it's probably in someone's way. But to actually drive your car and park it, like normally done, that's an isser daraisa. So an isser daraisa, you're not allowed to do to avoid a hefsid, and you're not even allowed to ask a guy to do to avoid a hefsid. So turning off the car is one thing. If you happen to be someplace where you're leaving, all you'll get is a $20 ticket. But what if you're, you know, what if, whatever, you're leaving in a terrible, terrible place?
Sorry, what's the duration?
Of driving a car? Havara, because you burn gas. you know, probably some other things too. So parking the car, there's no hetzer to do yourself. There's not even a hetzer to do al yedei akum. The only hetzer is, Chazal said, b'dleike hitiru kol machave inu mafsid, that when someone has an unexpected threat of hefsid, of a big hefsid, an unexpected situation of loss of money, of danger to money comes about, like in the old days, like a fire, you're allowed to hint to a guy. That's the only hetzer they gave you, to hint to a guy to do a real malacha. So in this case, lechora, you could hint to a guy to park your car. I think in some places they have belly parking or something. I know it sounds a little fancy to me. But then I think you could drive up, and that's hinting to the guy. The guy will go park your car. In other places, if you can, you know, find a guy who is smart enough to get a hint, but not smart enough to just drive off with your car, or maybe smart enough to get a hint, but ethical. So you can hint to a guy to park your car to avoid the big hefsid of getting towed or whatever. But you know that's the big challenge with driving to a hasmal Shabbos is what to do with the car afterwards. You know, in addition to, you know, just, you know, whether or not you're skillful enough to minimize the luck on the way there. So again, for turning off the ignition, if there's no guy, yeish makom lahakel, to turn it off with the shinoi, you know, with your toes or something. Or your what? I'm not convinced. Maybe your elbow in the stomach. And parking the car, there would be no heter, even al yedei akum. The only heter would be hinting to a guy. I think that in some places here in Israel, in Shari Tzedek, they might have a guy who takes care of the cars.
Only
in Shari Tzedek, they have a guy who parks your car. Or in some places in America, I heard they have valet parking, so that's great. That's where it means that you're not even saying anything. They're doing it totally on their own. But in other places, it's in other places it's a little tricky.
In terms of the car door, a lot of times when you open or close the car door, it triggers an additional malacha of the bolt.
Yeah, for sure. The car door is the biggest problem. So if you have, you know, a goyish cabbie, then you should try with all your powers of persuasion to tell him he has to open and close the door for you. I think a reasonable cabbie might. You know, I don't know, like if you're in, you know, New York or something, you might think you're trying to carjack him or something. But I guess in most places, if you explain to them nicely, you have to get the goyish cabbie to open and close the door for you. What if you don't have a goyish cabbie? You're in your own car or in a Jewish cabbie, so then it's all the same, or the guy won't, so I'm not getting out of the seat, you know, that's not part of my job. Then you have to open and close the door. You have to open and close the door yourself. It could be that if you're in your own car, once you open it, you can like use your elbow and push a little button that keeps the light on or something, and then it won't open and close every time you open and close the door. But I'm not a bucky, each car is different. Yeah, but then your battery will die by the time you drive.
I'm saying that.
Oh, can you turn it off?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, turn it off so that nothing goes on if you open the door. Then it's gewaldic. Okay, if you can do that, then gewaldic in your own car. Of course, with a Jewish cabbie, that's not going to help. So if you have to, open the car door, and obviously you have to open the car door and close the car door on Shabbos. Once you get out of the cab, I don't think you have to close it. You can leave to him. Then he has no choice. But you certainly have to open it, and you have to drive with it closed, and you have to get out of the car. So in all these things, so if you're not in an emergency and running to beat the clock every second, then you have to try to minimize the malacha if you can. How do you minimize the malacha? So the standard eitzes for minimizing malacha, if you can't get a goy to do it, or goy is the best way to do malacha. If you can't get a goy, shinoy, so open and close the car door b'shinoy. Now you have to be a little trickier because opening the car door b'shinoy, I think anything but your hands is probably a shinoy. Closing the car door could be there are many normal ways of closing a car door. But I assume you can, you know, I guess from the inside, maybe there's not so many normal ways of closing a car door. So you have to try to do it b'shinoi. Another option besides shinoi is shnayim shasa'uhu. Since especially since opening a car door only takes one person. So if two people do it, if you can't do it with a shinui for whatever reason, it's just too hard. If two people do it at once, it also minimizes the malacha. But basically, you have to do that malacha. You have no choice.
Would it be essential for Shabbos to put your car keys attached to your house keys? That way you can work on
So the question is, what's the nature of the mukta of car keys? Is car keys a... to attach them to your house keys, you mean so it'll all be on one thing and you can't even get it off. Could be. Most people have their car keys. A lot of people have their car keys with their house keys anyway. The Shmir Shabbos Gehoz seems to be pretty makel about cars and mukta. He thinks they're klishin lachtel issers. Chor car keys are also, I think, you can say certainly such a situation is only klishin lachtel isser. So if you're metatel to drive, then for sure that's okay. That's sorof gufo. Even afterwards, you know, if you... even afterwards, first of all, you can always leave it in your car or give it a guy to put someplace. Or, you know, b'makom, you know, tzorich, you can rely on kikar or tinok, and if it's only klishim achle, if, for klishim achle iser, and carry it together, you know, on top of or in the middle of something else. So there's enough basis for that.
Assuming it's not a dire need, is it mutter to drive further, let's say, Shari Tzedek, to know, because you know that there's going to be a guy there, than there is to then to... Is it mutter to drive further, knowing that there's going to be someone going to turn off your car, even though, or is that considered extra malacha?
It's mutter. I mean, from here, it's not further, but theoretically, is it mutter to drive further to some place where you'll have someone to take care of your car later? Now, usually, you see, usually these are not really shilas, because most people that I know pick their hospital based on the medical care. And once you pick your hospital based on the medical care, so nothing else matters. Like, it doesn't matter which hospital is further to driving Shabbos or which hospital is closer to driving Shabbos. It doesn't matter which hospital has Mahadran food and which hospital doesn't have Mahadran food. The poskim write that if one hospital is going to give you better medical care when you're in Sakana, then you should go to the better hospital. In America, people go where their doctor is because there they're going to get better care. But if, you know, if sometimes, you know, it's mamish, a 50-50 toss-up in the, you know, case where it's mamish, you could go either way. Mamish makes no difference for you. You're a, you know, you're a very plain kind of consumer, right? That reminds me of a story where way I heard it was the founding Rosh Yeshiva Gush was giving someone about kashrus, you know, mahadran kashrus, regular kashrus, and he explained to them, you know, it's like a matter of, you know, what's important to you. You know, they're, you know, if you went to a doctor, would you just say, I'll go to the Kupat Cholim and, you know, take whatever doctor they give me? Or would you try to find the best doctor? So he said, similarly, you know, just see whatever kashrus you try. So some woman said, apparently, says, I just go to the Kupat Cholim and take whatever doctor they give me. So he says, okay, so you shouldn't eat mahadran. So I don't know, if you just go to whatever hospital comes, then I don't think you can drive further just to have a guy take care of your car. You should drive closer and then worry about, you know, then you'll see what happens with your car. I don't think having a guy to take care of your car, that's only hefsed. Having a guy to take care of your car is not matter driving further. But usually people, you know, have other shitas, but I don't think it's matter driving further. You know, if you would live in Inkarim, you know, I don't think you could drive to Shari Tzedek, so a guy will take care of your car. No, I think that certainly for the Iker getting there, you should communicate explicitly. I think Ramiza can cause delays, can cause confusions. So I think you should tell him. You should tell him explicitly. First of all, Mir La'akav is mutter for a chola. I mean, we don't require Ramiza. When a case where Mir La'akav is mutter, certainly if it's a Mir La'akav, I mean, it's a Jew, it doesn't matter. For a case where Mir La'akav is mutter, we don't say you have to try to do a Ramiza. Certain cases, because I were mutter Mir La'akav. For sure, in this case, because our matter and lachem, you don't have to try to minimize how you tell the guy or how the guy does it. You have to minimize how you do what you do yourself.
Is there any hetzer to like stop and pick somebody up or like go out of your way or anything like that? Like,
so generally, if you're going to a hospital, generally if you're going to, you know, if a cabbie wants to stop and get, you know, and get a shawarma, that's not under your control. Although, you know, if you're in a rush, you should tell him he should do it on his next customer. But generally, no, you have to take the most direct route possible. Again, normally, it doesn't mean you should go the wrong way down a wrong way street and kill 8 people, chas v'shalom. But, you know, you should take the most direct route possible, and you can't do any extra malacha stopping on the way. The question is, what about stopping on the way? This is the, I don't know if seriously, like the whole doula issue. What if you're stopping on the way? So if you're stopping on the way to get your mother, then unless it's a very unique situation, I think that's hard to justify. You know, okay, you can, you know, you can give birth with your husband without your mother. I don't know, it might be koch nefesh for your mother. That's, you know, that's her cheshbon. But you know, the issue is stopping, a lot of people nowadays have doulas, stopping to get doulas. From what I hear from the doulas, you know, one of my jobs as a rabbi is I try not to paskin medicine. I try to paskin halacha when I know the answer. I try not to tell you who's right medically and who's wrong medically, because I don't think that's, you know, I have my opinions if you want to know them. But I don't think it's part of my, you know, rabbinic job to tell you which doctors are right and which doctors are wrong.
If you ask the doula to meet you there.
So that generally, from what all the doulas I've ever met, work under the assumption that that's part of pikuach nefesh, that having the doula there is part of pikuach nefesh. And even though, you know, exactly, ask some, you know, statistician exactly what are the statistical difference having the doula there, not having the doula there, they'll probably tell you very slim. But then again, a lot of things that Chazal tell us to do on Shabbos, they'll probably say are very slim, and we're choshish for them anyway. And all the babies you don't get bris mila on the eighth day, the statisticians will tell you that's crazy. The odds are very slim that it'll be dangerous, and we're machmir anyway because we take sakana very, very far. So I think the minhag of the doulas is that they say that, not that you can't give birth without a doula, but that it really, you know, then you have less of a risk of ending up with a C-section or v'chuli, and it's, you know, less sakana. That's why they all drive to the hospital Shabbos. Sometimes the doulas pick you up. If you work off the assumption, which is that it's pikuach nefesh, then you can call the doula on Shabbos to meet you in the hospital. You know, if you assume not that way, you know, again, I can't paskin on the medicine. But I think the doulas generally assume, and the rabbis of the doulas generally assume that it is pikuach nefesh. And if so, then you can call her on Shabbos, and she can make her way to the hospital. I don't know, some doulas drive to the hospital, some doulas have a guy, you know, every Shabbos to drive to the hospital, depending on exactly what their personal policies are.
If it's the same one phone call to the doula, the cab driver, and the doula will pick you up, should you just call the doula and have them pick you up in the hospital? Is there anyone anyway if they know that, or should you just not call them and just go on the cab on their own? Because one of the doulas do their own thing, but should you tell the doula to go to the hospital? Otherwise, that is on your head.
No, I think the doulas have enough poskim behind them that you don't have to worry
you
about being on your head. Yeah.
And then once you do that, you're going to do a pick you up also on the head.
It depends on the timing. If the doula lives very far away, then maybe you should be in more of a rush. If the doula lives close by, then, you know. It all depends. It also depends if you have an option of a goyish cab driver. If you have a goyish cab driver option, then why have the doula pick you up? Take the goyish cab. You know, if you don't have... So now, of course, the problem is, how do I know what my options are? I'm never sure what the answer is. How do I know whether my options are a doula or a chiloni cab driver? In which case, the doula might as well come pick me up. Or the option of the doula and a goyish cab driver, in which case the goyish cab driver should pick me up. So maybe the doula has a goyish cab driver, then it's no problem. So I'm not sure. You might have to have Ruach HaKodesh to know the answer to that. I'm not sure, but theoretically, you know, if the option of the doula or a Jewish cab driver, then I don't see why a chilani cab driver is any different than a doula. The doula might as well pick you up. Gevaldik. Gevaldik. That's the best. But sometimes you call and they don't have any cabs.
What if your husband isn't home?
Is what?
What if the husband isn't home? They're having to go get him a cab on the way to the hospital?
What if the husband isn't home?
He's in shul, Shabbos morning or something.
What if the husband isn't shul and it's not gross? He's in shul far away. So if you have a goyish cabbie, you know, who's going to get him, then, you know, I think that's a davar pashut. What if you have a Jewish cabbie or you're driving yourself to pick your husband up from shul? So often you can send the kid to run and get your husband before the cab gets there. But lu yitzuyer, can you actually drive out of your way to pick your husband up from shul? I don't know if it's automatically mutter.
Yeah, but if a woman's home by herself, she can't walk to shul, so...
No, the question is, you can go to the hospital by yourself,
or
you can...
The husband
gonna
know?
Yeah, don't worry. He'll find out. If Mocher Sadeh of Eden people find out, then...
I mean, sometimes, I don't know, it might depend on exactly, you know, your psychological state. Okay, so it's not so pashut that, you know, that mamish go out of your way and do malacha to pick up your husband, but if you mamish can't handle it otherwise, then I think it is more pashut. But you can usually figure something out.
Wouldn't a labor culture do
up
the same, if not more?
Yeah.
You're adding medical, potentially medical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is water a problem?
Mother.
What?
Pick up a mother or a labor coach.
Right. Well, a labor coach is a little different. So a labor coach is mamish, you know, knows medicine, etc. I mean, a labor coach is not only psychological. A labor coach is mamish medical.
Right.
You know, so that's not a doctor, but it's their own kind of medicine. So a labor coach. The assumption is that that's real pikuach nefesh. For your mother or your husband, that's like to make you feel better. So if it's just a matter of sitting in the car and someone else is driving, obviously if your husband has to drive you, then he has no choice. You can't drive yourself when you're in labor. So if it's just a matter of sitting in the car and then the seder, and that's not such a big shaila. If it's a matter of actually like making a trip in the car to pick up your husband or your mother, then I think it might depend, like, if you're Beseder, you know, if you can handle it, then, you know, he'll figure it out and make his way to the hospital. He's not so stupid. But
he gets to walk now, right?
What?
He gets home and you're not there. Now he has to walk to the hospital.
He gets home, he's not there. He can walk to the hospital. That sure wouldn't be so crazy for him to get a guy to take him to the hospital. That might be at least in need of a chola for you. You know, that he can take care of whatever you need, etc. He'll probably be able to meet you pretty quickly. Depending on exactly what the situation is. And you could probably get him home from shul before the cab comes. You know, usually people's shuls aren't an hour away, and then you can run into shul, and they're very excited, and, you know, it's the best thing that happened to them all year, because they get to be in some exciting thing and save someone, and, you know, it's generally you can work it out. But if someone's mamish, you know, they can't handle it, you know, without their mother or husband or something, then that's real pikuach nefesh. And you could even do a real malacha. Okay, phone calls, by the way. Here's the one. Is it possible, is it preferable to call a cab from an old phone that has no lights or just digital display screen, or should you just use the closest phone? So this is the same rule that we've been saying the whole time. If time is of the essence, then you shouldn't delay. And you should never have a long delay. I mean, you should never have a long delay. I mean, if time is of the essence, you shouldn't even delay 3 minutes. And you should never say, I'm going to delay, I'm going to go, you know, to my neighbor, you know, 3 blocks away and whatever and find his old phone. You know, that's, you know, you have to get to the hospital as soon as possible when you're supposed to go. But if time is not of the essence, then you're always supposed to minimize the malacha. So it's better to use an old phone than to use a newfangled phone. It could be, I don't know where Miller thinks about this, is it better to use a cell phone that's not plugged in so you don't have the chashash of mechuvar lekarka, leave it to the chazan ish, than a regular phone that is plugged in, meaning that's on a landline? I don't know. It depends. Here you have to weigh all kinds of different complicated shitas. So, unclear. What? If you're going to have to redial, but right now you don't have to redial.
Before Shabbos.
Before Shabbos. All cell phones do that. Yeah. But if you're going to take your cell phone, it's probably, you know, minimize the malacha to leave it unplugged. Not to unplug it on Shabbos. But if you leave it unplugged before Friday, then you have, you know, one less svar lahachmir. But, you know, it's not...
Should one leave it on?
Or you should leave it on, yeah, if you're going to use your cell phone. Anyway, so in general, with the phones, meaning it's better to do it with the shinoi. You know, you can dial the phone with the shinoi if you're not pressed for time. So all these things, mean to take the phone off the hook and to dial with the shinoi, it's always better to do things with the shinoi, or you usually can't have a guy dial the phone for you unless you have a housekeeper. But it's always better to do it with a guy. If you can't do it with a guy, always better to do it with a shinoi. If you can't do it with a shinoi, better do it with two people working together. Although with phones, you know, that's a little harder to dial the phone that way. What else about getting to the hospital? Okay. Can your wife take a shower during labor on Shabbos? So taking a shower, we know there are always two issues in halacha. One is the isser of bathing. The issue of bathing is for sure mutter, even for mitzdayer. I mean, that's, you know, that's really a non-issue. Even if you're very far from sakana, we're making on the issue of bathing in hot water on Shabbos. The problem is, of course, that in order to bathe in hot water, you have to get hot water.
So if you have a mutter way of getting hot water, then gevaldik. Yeah. What? If you need the warm water to relieve your tzar. I mean, if someone's mitzar because it's 100 million degrees outside, then there's no hazard shower and warm water. But if someone is mitzar and needs warm water to... Usually you don't. Usually mitzar doesn't need warm water to relieve their tzar. But if someone has some skin condition or some mitzar, then I think the Bir Halacha quotes from Rabbi Akiva Eger that for a mitzar were mekel on the Isur of bathing on Shabbos. But the real issue here is turning on the hot water. So if you have a situation where it's mutter turn on hot water on Shabbos, you know, like a dud shemesh that was only on the shemesh part, I'll leave it to many poskim, then gevaldik. But what about a normal case? So it's a shita here. The not all may be familiar with it. One of the shitas of like childbirth, like, you know, without epidurals and vechuli and natural ways of relieving, you know, your pain, etc., involves a lot of showering. Everyone has their own shitas. I'm not passing shitas. You know, but it really works amazingly sometimes. And l'chori, you need to shower in hot water, otherwise it doesn't work. So, in and it's a big way of being makel. So in this case, you know, certainly nira l'nias daiti that this is really like a real need of the chola. This isn't just something nice for the chola. Nira l'nias daiti, again, I'm passing medicine here a little, that it's not just like the chola wants her book to read, or the chola wants her nice mitpachat, or the chola wants the cookies that she likes, which are like needs of the chola to make her happy, etc., but not really like medically make her relieve her symptoms. This is the case where it doesn't save your life, but it really medically relieves your symptoms. And the Shemir Shabbos says that if someone's a chola shibushu sakana, anything they need, maybe you can make them for drabanans. But if something relieves their symptoms, even though it's not a life-saving technique, it's not like, you know, emergency room with all the lights flashing, but if something really relieves your symptoms and is a big tzorech, then he considers that pikuach nefesh. So I think that if someone, you know, this is their shitav, really relieving their symptoms and really being able to get through without complications, and I think this is a shitav that has a lot of evidence behind it, I think this might be a new shitav, then I think you can consider pikuach nefesh. I was very mitlabed on this. But I think you can consider pikuach nefesh to do the shita of showering during labor. But of course, like everything else, you have to try to minimize. Now, usually we're talking about doing this in the hospital, I think. Or even at, you know, I don't know, a hospital at home. Usually it's like after you go to the hospital, the shita, best I'm familiar with. So if there's a guy, well, they're usually guy in hospitals, get the guy to turn on the shower. If there's a guy, get the guy to turn on the shower. If there's no guy, then I think you could do it b'shinoi. Or it's not so hard to turn on the shower b'shinoi. You know, certain things like turning on the shower, you have to figure out a real shinoi. Because sometimes, you know, I don't know, people use the back of their hand or et cetera. But I'm sure you could figure out a shinoi. But I think that might be a real need, but still you have to minimize it and get a guy to do it if a guy is available, or do it with a shinoi. I think these might be any other ha'oros re giving birth on Shabbos or being in a hospital on Shabbos post labor. Carrying, of course. We forgot the most important part. That's here. What is the best way to pack your bag for the hospital so you get stuff out without moving the muksa items and buses, etc.? So, now, here, people, please feel free to add your opinions. During the week, we have this big hospital bag, which has all the things that you might want to make your stay as pleasant as possible, which is mamash magialach. But on Shabbos, you know, it's not... You know, in sort of a modern westernized country, and for sure in a Jewish country such as Israel or New York City, I'm not sure how much you really need to take to the hospital. If anything, you really need to take to the hospital with you on Shabbos. So, if there's no malacha involved, right, let's say you have your weekday bag, and then you turn it into a Shabbos bag for Shabbos, and you only have Shabbos-tick things, non-mukta things. You don't have a wallet or, you know, or a cell phone. You just have... You know, comfortable, you know, clothing and whatever, and a book to read and v'chuli. Then, if it's not mukta items and you're not going outside tchum and you're not doing hotzah, then gevaldik, of course, take whatever makes you comfortable. Then there's no halachic issues there. But there are three potential halachic issues involved. One is mukta if you're bringing mukta items. Two is hotzah if you're going outside an eruv, which in Yerushalayim you're not. But in other places, you know, you might be. And three is tchum. If you're going outside tchum Shabbos, that's, you know, in some ways, hotzah is more chomer because it could be a malach in some cases. But in some ways, tchum is more chomer because you're not allowed to have the result of your items going outside tchum, even if you didn't directly take them outside Tchum. Going outside Tchum, usually people, I'm thinking in my head, usually people don't go outside Tchum to give birth on Shabbos. Usually people go within their metropolitan, I mean people who live in big cities, go within their city. People who live in Shtetlach in Kansas probably have to go to the nearest big city, and that's probably for sure outside Tchum. But, you know, most people, I don't think, go outside Tchum. Where do people in Teaneck give birth? Englewood Hospital. I bet Englewood Hospital is in Tchum of Teaneck. I think it's one big city from Teaneck to Englewood, I bet. So usually, but sometimes Tchum could come up. If you're driving from Alon Shvut, Tchum is an issue.
If you're like in Beit Shemesh for Shabbos, though,
if you're in Beit Shemesh, then there's no hospital in Beit Shemesh, then you have to go to Shaar Tzedek. That could be outside Tchum. Probably it is. It's certainly outside the Eruv, and probably it is outside Tchum. And that's a good point. I forgot about Beit Shemesh. Okay, and Alon Shvut also, it's outside Tchum. So when you go outside Tchum or outside the Eruv, then taking anything with you is Chilul Shabbos. Even if it's in the taxi. And for Tchum, even if the guy carries it, it's still a problem. Because your things are going outside Tchum. You're not allowed to have your property go outside the Tchum. You're not even allowed to go yourself outside Tchum. But it's mutter for Pikuach Nefesh. So on Shabbos, you should only... Now, to the best of my knowledge, I don't know if you need to bring anything to the hospital on Shabbos. Except for, I mean, certainly in America, you need to bring your health insurance card. Here, maybe you don't need to bring anything. If you show up to the hospital on Shabbos with nothing, then they'll worry about it after Shabbos.
Do you mean in Shabbos, or do you mean in any hospital?
Any hospital you show up.
Including in
Cairo. Okay, so it could be you don't... Now, of course... In Yerushalayim, it's not outside. It depends where you're coming from. If you're coming from inside, if you're coming from Beit Shemesh, Shaar Tzedek, then it's a big problem. If you're coming from Yerushalayim to Yerushalayim, then you can bring whatever non-muktzah things. You can bring whatever non-muktzah things you want. There's some discussion about bringing extra things in the car. It's going to cause the car to work harder. And most of the poskim assume that a little, very very light things are negligible. And I don't think they're machmer on that. So what do you need to bring? I think in Chutz Laretz you definitely need to bring your insurance card. Eventually, I guess they'll save your life, but you're not going to get proper Western medical care if you don't bring your insurance information. But other than that, I don't know if you need to bring anything to the hospital. I don't know if you need to bring any muktzah things to the hospital. I don't think you need to bring any muktzah things to the hospital. Now, after you give birth, if you want to buy a soda, so you need money, but okay, after you give birth, I think that, the soda is not really so necessary. So I think that you should go without muktzah things, and if you're coming from far away, you should go without anything. Wear good clothing that'll serve you well in the hospital, meaning don't wear for the wife. The husband can wear whatever he wants in his head. Don't wear a hat to the hospital, because then they'll put you in the bed, whatever, and you won't be able to keep your hat on. Wear a mitpacha to the hospital, and then you can keep it on while you're giving birth. So you have to think about, if you're not bringing your bag, you have to make sure you're dressed properly. But every case is different. If you need to bring something, then you do it based on the minimum, halacha possible.
If you're in
Tchum but outside of the Eruv, so then it doesn't really... If you're in Tchum and outside of the Eruv, then there are two possible kulas. The truth is that, look, there is a range of opinions about this. I'm not saying there aren't various svaras lahakel, which are brought up here and there, but let's just stick with this for now. I think Ryan Miller agrees. If you're in Tchum but outside the Eruv, then there are two potential kulas. One is shvus to shvus. If you have a guy carry things outside the Eruv, we assume nowadays the mainstream halacha is that hotzahs only drop on it nowadays. Okay, whether the briskers believe that or not, but the mainstream halacha is that hotzahs only drop on it. So, b'makom mitzvah or some sort of tzorach gadol, you can have a guy carry things for you outside an Eruv, because you're not doing anything. Tchum, and you're doing something. Your things are going outside Tchum. For an Eruv, only the guy's doing something, but you have to figure out if it's really a makom mitzvah or tzorach gadol. Like It could be if you're in, you know, some not such a big Jewish city, and you're going to go to the hospital and you're not going to have grape juice and challah, then that's makom mitzvah. You're not going to have a sitter. Or even, I think the Torah Shiletta says, even the husband wants to bring a Gemara. You know, what do you do? Sit all Shabbos and twiddle your thumbs. So then that's shvus to shvus makom mitzvah. Then yesh makom, you know, then it's okay. Or shvus to shvus makom mitzvah choli. You know, if you have to figure out exactly what that is. But usually, you know, I gave birth in Methodist Hospital. I mean, before we made Aliyah, we gave birth. Obviously, here in Yerushalayim, any hospital has everything you need for Shabbos and for weekdays, etc. You know, they have full stock-based medrash. They have plenty of Shabbos food. They have a hajj and a sherim, I'm sure. I gave birth in Methodist Hospital in Park Slope. Park Slope's not a Jewish neighborhood. To the best of my knowledge, Methodist is not a denomination of Judaism. And in Methodist Hospital, there's a Shabbos room. There's a room in the hospital, not a Shabbos room, there's a Jewish chapel. And in the Jewish chapel, they have a closet with grape juice and with challah for whoever's stuck there in Shabbos. And they have Sidurim and Chumashim and Sfarim and, you know, and Talis and anything you need. So I assume the same is true. I assume Kalvach Omer, the same is true in Mount Sinai or Maimonides. So if you're in some place like that, then, you know, and I bet the same is true in, you know, I don't know, wherever people in L.A. go, what is it, Cedar Sinai or something? You know, but if you're someplace where you really won't be able to do mitzvahs or have kosher food or things like that, then, you know, if it's a shvus de shvus, then yesh makom lahakel v'makom mitzvah. There are two other kulas, there's another kula, which the Shmir Shabbos says, although, you know, there are those in this room with sfeikos about it. The Shmir Shabbos says, you know, he has this very fascinating kula. He says, if there's an error between you and the cab, and there's an error between the cab and the hospital, then the cab is a Rosh HaSayachid, so it's not, so you're never doing Hotzah, because it's just staying in Rosh HaSayachid the whole time. Even if there's no error by the hospital, you know, sometimes they have, you know, driveways with a roof, with three walls, etc. I don't know, it's a chiddush, it's creative. Shabbos, but he uses this for cases where you are, you know, where you're really stuck, not just to bring a book. Let's say, you know, the husband doesn't have Shabbos food or something like that, and there's no goy available. So if you're really, really stuck, you know, in cases where you don't have Shabbos food or kiddush or, you know, sitter or things like that, then certainly shvus de shvus makom mitzvah is a heter, this creative heter of the Aruch HaShulchan. Even when it comes to tchumen, if you're really stuck, the Torah Seyaleta says you can be mafker your stuff in front of three people before Shabbos and have kavana never to reacquire it on Shabbos, and then maybe it'll be exempt from tchum. Oh, that's also, you know, the creative solutions. These are when you're stuck. But usually you're not stuck. Usually, you know, you can get there and there'll be kosher food and there'll be, you know, a place to eat a Shabbos meal and there'll be, you know, usually there's whatever you need. So theoretically, you should be able to go on Shabbos either with only mutter items if you are going from within town, from within the Erev, or with nothing if you're going from far away.
In certain areas of Brooklyn and Manhattan where many folks could think it's just around their eyes, could we just be mekel the same way?
You know, if you're talking about a goy, then, you know, sure, especially if you're tzarif for your Shabbos, that once you're in the car, the stomach of your street's not, it's just the other streets he's going through. Once you're in the car, make sure you say, yachid, al-yidei goy, I think, you know, if it's really necessary. But all these things are, if something's really necessary, I don't know if it's always really necessary. I don't know who's giving birth in the room. What's really necessary to have with you when you give birth? Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of things that are really necessary that they have at the hospital. You shouldn't give birth in the midbar. But
can you start, like, making, you know, heterim, like, oh, there's a seawall, or, like, oh, you know, start.
It depends how big of a Talmud Chacham you are and how fast you think.
But, like,
depends what kind of processor you have inside.
Just, like, even sorry for everything.
What? I don't know. These are complicated questions. No, you can't just be even sorry for everything, as a general rule. Only some things. So cell phones are the big issue. People nowadays feel like you can't go anywhere without a cell phone, and sometimes they're right. I think if you're going to drive through, let's say you're driving through someplace dangerous or you're driving very far on the highway, then I think you could really say a cell phone is pikuach nefesh. You know, certainly, you know, if it could be someone would say a cell phone is always pikuach nefesh if you're, you know, driving dangerous places. But certainly if you have a lettuce, what if the car breaks down? So if the car breaks down between here and Shari Tzedek, so I think you can mistader. You know, if the car breaks down, you know, between some yeshuv, you know, on the Arava somewhere where the nearest yeshuv is, you know, 2 hours away, then, you know, then it might really be pikuach nefesh because you don't want to get unduly delayed. What? Well, there's also the outside issues. So in terms of, if people use their cell phones to tell time, I don't know, no one uses their cell phones to tell time on Shabbos. That's not the real use of a cell phone, right? We say that something which is used for Isser and Heter is not, that Klishonach is considered total Heter. But that's if the two uses are at least equal. Meaning, if people would really use their cell phone as a watch on Shabbos, then I think that might really be an equal use to making phone calls. I don't know, but I don't think so. I think clearly the cell phone is for making phone calls, and the Tufel use is for telling the time. So I think you have to call it at least a Kli Shel Machzor Isser, if not Mukza. I personally think that some have heard this from me, that you can call it a Kli Shel Machzor Isser. But a Kli Shel Machzor Isser, you can't just... you know, why does everyone want to bring a cell phone? So that on Matzei Shabbos, you can, after you give birth, you can make phone calls. If someone really wants to bring a cell phone because they might need to make an emergency call on the way to the hospital, then that's called pikuach nefesh. You might have an emergency on the way to the hospital. And I think someone coming from some far out yeshuv someplace, you know, in a 2-hour car ride in the middle of the desert, I think even if you're not giving birth, it might be sakana to be out there in the middle of who knows what kind of people without a cell phone. Certainly if you are giving birth. But I think most people nowadays, if you're going from, you know, the apartments across the street from the Beis Medrash to Old Beis Medrash to Columbia Presbyterian, or from, you know, Flatbush to Methodist Hospital, I think people only want a cell phone so that on Matzei Shabbos they can call their parents right away. So that's that's not really any sort of need.
I mean, just from our experience, we actually forgot to bring this up.
So, right, so it might depend, you know, in a lot of hospitals, I assume you can borrow someone's cell phone, so send a cell phone to make a call. What? Alright, so again, if it's really necessary for getting to the hospital, then, you know, if it's necessary for getting to the hospital, it might be pikuach nefesh mamish. But I think in most cases, it's just convenient to have as soon as, you know, three stars come in on Matzei Shabbos, so you can call your mother right away and she's not upset. How come you call me 20 minutes after Shabbos? You could probably borrow a cell phone to do that too. But, you know, if I think in most cases, no one has a having to use their... It depends on the case. But if in most cases, you don't have a having to use your cell phone before you give birth. The cell phone's for after you give birth. Or, you know, the cell phone's to tell your mother... You know, if it would be a weekday, you would tell your mother you're in labor, or, you know, call your family in America and tell them you're in labor or not, depending on whatever your sheikhs are. So I think most of the time the cell phone's not necessary. But if you might need to call someone, let's say you have some shash of complications and you have a relative who's a big expert doctor. So if you might need to call someone, so that's a different story. But I think most, or if you're going to be in a deserted area or a dangerous area, then, you know. But in most cases, I think that, that it's not really... It's just stama convenience. And for convenience, even Shavuos to Shavuos is not much.
In terms of when Shabbos starts and when Shabbos ends, can you be makel against the Luach, start using the Das Agroah?
In terms of when Shabbos starts, I would be very hard-pressed to be makel. You know, Rav Moshe does have his 9 minutes in America, but, you know, whatever. These questions are similar to the last questions you asked. All these docistic questions you can't answer in a general fashion. Every case is different. You can be makel to in the 40 minutes before Shkia in Yerushalayim.
Is there frankly an option to leave a bag in a locker in the hospital, and that way you don't worry about all these issues?
That would be gewaldic, but do hospitals have lockers? I don't know. What? Yeah, so you have to have a friend with a locker in the hospital. You have to know the right. You have to know the right people. Anyone who's pregnant should have started inviting a midrashic girl for Shabbos meals in the beginning of the year. And by now, you could keep a tick with everything you need in her dorm room. What? If you leave your payros outside of tchum, then they don't become total. I think, if I recall correctly, then they get the tchum of where they are. Meaning, if I start Shabbos Beis Shemesh and I leave my belongings, if my belongings are in tchum, then they're in my tchum. If my belongings are 1999 amos away, then they have my tchum. But if my belongings are 2001 amos outside of city limits, using the cheshbon, which always ends up being more than 2001 amos, then they get then they get their own tchum. So yeah, that would be fine, but you have to know if it's practical. Any more Shabbos questions?
So just practically, just in terms of that, let's say, try to you're going to read the Chemish, so there's no problem leaving a bag in with an MMY girl?
Yeah, you could leave a bag with an MMY girl.
Usually you bring your wallet yourself and you can shop it.
Okay, I can't solve everything. So you have two cell phones. Most people have three or four cell phones. They just did a seker in Israel and figured out the average Israeli is 1.2 cell phones, and I think that was including babies. So it's I think a lot of it is dormant numbers maybe, but I don't know, maybe they took them into account. Okay, in any case, everyone has three cell phones. In America, everyone has three cars. In Israel, we're not that rich, everyone has three cell phones. That we can afford, especially since there's no monthly fee. Okay, other questions. If my wife misses Shacharis and or Mincha during labor, does she do Tashlumin? Theoretically, the husband could also miss Shacharis and or Mincha and or Maariv during labor. Although, less likely, but, if it's coming to the end of the time and he was planning to go to Mincha at the end of the day, right, then you have to go to the hospital, then, and they're in a big rush, then theoretically he can miss it also. Or if she doesn't want him to leave her side, right? So the Torah Siletta says, if the wife says the husband absolutely can't leave her side, usually the wife will say, absolutely don't leave my side unless, you have to daven, then what can I do? But don't leave my side for Divrei Rishus. Because, it's more psychological. If you leave my side to daven, that's fine. If you leave my side to do something you want to do, then it shows the Iglai Milsa that you don't care. But let's say it's not just the Iglai Milsa issue. Let's say it's that, really, whatever, it's very difficult. The wife says the husband can't leave her side. The Torah Siletta says that even if he misses out on the davening, that's Osik Mitzvah, Fatim and Mitzvah. And just like the doctors. I think, I didn't see this, the Torah Siletta only discusses the husband's mitzvah. He doesn't... he doesn't discuss the wife's perspective. The wife is very busy, but I think you can call if the woman's mamish giving birth, I think you can call that osik mitzvah also be pater min mitzvah. So what's the rule of osik mitzvah? It's a little complicated. The Dogel Mervava quotes in Simen Shin Mem Aleph that. If you're osek b'mitzvah the whole time, from the beginning to the end of the zman, then you don't have to do tashlumin, because you had an authentic ptur. But if the beginning of zman, you just did other things, and then, because you didn't know anything would happen. Right? So if someone's osek b'mitzvah from, using modern day times, from 12:20 p.m. till 7:40 p.m. or whatever, and they missed the whole mincha, then they don't have to do tashlumin, they don't have to make it up. But if someone was just doing their regular life till 4 p.m. because they thought they were time to daven mincha, and then was osik b'mitzvah, then, because they could have davened in the first part, they have to make it up. So the rule is, if you're osik b'mitzvah through the whole zman, then you don't have to make it up. But if you're only osik b'mitzvah at the end of the zman, then at the beginning of the zman, it was just a regular ones. Why didn't you daven at the beginning of the zman? Because you didn't know something would happen. That's just a regular happenstance, and then you would have to make it up. At what point does the wife... Yeah. The woman and man should be the same thing, except that usually the man doesn't miss a tefillah. Because usually, he can take a 5-minute break. The woman, can't really take a break. Sometimes she can. It's gewaldic, but it all depends,
for the husband, it's not his body. So he can always take a break if possible. For the wife, it's not always so posh to take a break, and sometimes you have issues of it's not naki for davening. But a thing called the woman osig mitzvah, or the husband. So if you miss the whole zman because you're busy having a baby, then that's osig mitzvah and you're pater legamre. But if you're the beginning of zman, you just were doing other things, and then the end of the zman, you're osig mitzvah, then you have to make it up. At what point does the wife become a nida? So the Achronim point out three cases where the wife becomes a nida. This is very controversial. There are many different deos on this. I'll try to give you what I learned. There are three cases where a wife becomes a nida. Some people say a fourth. The obvious case is blood. Usually when the water breaks, there's bleeding or whatever. You know, at some point there's a lot of bleeding. So if there's using the regular rules of nida, meaning if, you know, usually there's a mucus plug that comes out, and then usually using the regular rules of nida, it is not nida. No, there's some tiny amount of blood that's a kesem somewhere that's generally not matame. And minastam, you can often determine that maybe it's from bachutz, it's not from the makor. But usually certainly when a woman's water breaks, generally dam comes out, or at some point in the labor dam. So when there's bleeding, like the regular halachas of nida, then you're for sure tamei. That's the easy one. And that's the only obvious one. The Achronim are medayik, then in the Gemara Shabbos, it has two other cases where we say a woman's really in sakana, ready to give birth. And the assumption, the Achronim, is that if she's so ready to give birth that she's in sakana, then that doesn't mean nowadays. Nowadays, even before any of these signs happen, you're in sakana, because you need to get to the hospital. But in the old days, you were already in the hospital. Your home was the hospital. So then you weren't in sakana until one of these three things happen. So the other two things that make a woman in nida is one, yosheves al mashber, going to the delivery room. So if a woman goes to the delivery room based on normal medical procedures, if you left your water bottle in the delivery room and go in to get it. But if a woman goes to the delivery room or some very fancy schmancy places, they have labor delivery rooms, but then they transform the bed into a delivery bed. If you go to the delivery room, that's sitting on the mashbar, on the birthing stool. That's a birthing stool. And that automatically makes you a nida, even if there's no dam. So that's the second. Dam, delivery room. And the third one is chavei rotel, nosos rotel b'agapeha, not being able to walk. If you can't walk, in the old days, I guess nowadays also, means like your friends would drag you by your arms. If you can't walk, then the assumption is that it's so close to the birth that ein psich zakever v'lodam, that the woman becomes a nida. What exactly does it mean not being able to walk? So, if you're walking around, then it's easy to tell. If you're walking around, then you can still walk. It doesn't mean you can walk every single second. You know, you have to stop for a little bit for contraction, but you can walk places. You know, you don't have to be able to walk every single second. You stop, I can't walk for a little while, for a few seconds, then I can again. So if you can walk, that's easy. If you're not in the labor bed, then I think it's pretty easy. If you can walk, then you're not a nida. If you can't walk and someone needs to schlep, someone needs to carry you, then you are a nida. The problem is, what if you're lying on the labor bed, you're in labor, you can't walk anyway because they've hooked you up to 8,000 machines. So how do you know whether you would have been able to walk or not? So I don't have enough Ruach HaKodesh to figure out on my own exactly how to know whether if you were walking you'd be able to walk, and maybe someone who's in the situation just knows on their own. But Rabbi Willig says if you have a contraction and you can't talk for a minute, then for sure you wouldn't be, then that's called not being able to walk if you would be, you know, in civilian life. So if you can't walk or you have a contraction and you can't talk for a minute, then that's called not being able to walk, and that makes you a nida. Now, there's not much of a nafkamina of this before you get to the hospital, because we manavshach. If the wife can walk, then she can walk. And if the wife can't walk, then if her mother's not around or if her mother's not, you know, healthy enough, then the husband has to carry her anyway, because it's bikoch nefesh to get her to the hospital. There's no, you know, the lania daiti, at least, when it comes to all these questions of nida when the woman's in childbirth, there's a fundamental difference between until you get to the maternity ward and once you're in the maternity ward. Until you get to the maternity ward, then of course, if you have a choice, if the wife's a nida and the husband could physically help her or someone else could,
then obviously someone else could, but that's not always practical. To get to the hospital, you have to get to the hospital. There's no room for being makar and hilchas nida to delay getting to the hospital. Because you have to get to the hospital. That's mamish piyuch nefesh. Even the husband has to carry the wife to the hospital. Usually you get there just fine, but in a case, you know, so all of a sudden someone's surprised, 19 of their 20 friends got to the hospital just fine normally, and all of a sudden they can't walk to the hospital, then they shouldn't be machmer, and their husband should schlep them to the hospital. Once you are in the hospital, and you're perfectly safe, then I know that bizman hazeh, there are those people who want to say all kinds of psychological svaras and emotional svaras, all of which are very, very important, and say that really, you know, the husband should be allowed to compromise the normal harchakos, and after all, what's going to happen now anyway, etc., etc. Well, you know, all of which makes some degree of common sense, but I'm not quite sure that it makes halachic sense. You know, in halacha, the halachas always apply, even if, you know, we're not worried that anything's going to happen between the husband and wife in the hospital and the maternity ward, we still keep the harchakos. That's the same as we do for any other halachas in the Shulchan Aruch. I think once the wife is out of sakana, meaning once she's not out of sakana yet, once you're in the hospital, then pretty much, you know, unless it's a really weird case, you know, unless you're in a third world country or something, once the wife is in the hospital, then I don't think there needs to be any compromise of the harchakos between husband and wife, you know, except for very rare cases. You know, in rare cases, pikuach nefesh comes first. You don't need shaylus. But in normal cases, it's not really even a shaylus pikuach nefesh. It's obvious that if the wife can't get into the cab, or can't get into the car, or can't get into the hospital, then that's pikuach nefesh. Once the wife is in the hospital, then all the doctors and everyone else doing things is pikuach nefesh, but the husband doesn't have to, you know, then the husband doesn't have to hold your hand, except in cases where, I don't know, there's some, you know, there's some tremendous, you know, very rare case.
In terms of the criteria of becoming a nida, so in Eretz Yisrael, Shlomo Zalman asking that if there's regular labor, that is 10 contractions every 5 minutes, one should assume that MC has a record below that.
Okay. So it could very well be that some people in America say that as well, but Sir Shlomo Zalman says there's regular contractions every 5 minutes. The other big issue is, which is also very controversial, what if you have no labor at all, but you know the nurse in the doctor's office says you're dilated X centimeters, etc., etc. There are many different dais about this. You know, my masor about this, that does not make you a nida. I don't know what is the minigar to throw. Okay, so again, some people say if the nurse says you're dilated a certain amount, although the way I learned that did not make you a nida, for sure da makes you a nida, for sure not being able to walk makes you a nida, we had a rule of thumb for estimating that, for sure delivery room makes you a nida, and Rav Shlomo Zalman says regular contractions in the stomach equivalent or really same as one of these other things could also make you a nida. Where is the husband allowed to stand in the room when his wife is a nida? We know that this is very controversial. Does the husband belong in the delivery room? Does the husband not belong in the delivery room? In the old days, husbands were never in the delivery room. You know, I'm talking about even Goyim. I don't know what they do nowadays. What do they do in Shari Tzedek nowadays? Are husbands allowed in the delivery room?
No.
Okay. In Hadassah they are. You know, there are different talking about this. Some people are very machmer where the husband shouldn't be in the delivery room because of a, you know, histaklus in Makomo Tamechusim during Nida. And they try to do tznias in the delivery room, but sometimes it's easier said than done because, and rightly so, you know, sometimes they're getting their medical work done, you know, has to take precedence over full covering. So some people... In some hospitals, I guess, have the minhag, the husband's not in the in the delivery room with the wife. Many people assume that the husband can be in the delivery room with his wife. He brings down here machlokas between the minchas Yitzchak and Rav Moshe. If it's just the husband's choice, then for sure he shouldn't be in the delivery room. You know, even though it is a very wonderful... It is a very wonderful thing, but there'll be really a lot of wonder to go around, and he'll be able to have a wonderful experience anyway. So I think if it's just a matter of, you know, being cool to be in the delivery room, then it's best just to avoid the issue. In most cases in our communities, you know, the wife really, really wants her husband in the delivery room. In such a case, so uh, think the Minchas Yitzchak still doesn't like it, but Rav Moshe says that if your wife wants you in the delivery room, then you could go in the delivery room, but you have to stand in a way where you won't see any Mekomos Mechusim. How do you do that? That's very hard. So Pashtus, the only way to do it is, you know, if the wife's lying down, to stand with your back to her body and your face to her head. So therefore, you, by definition, can only see, the husband can only see the wife's head because everything else behind his back. And this way, you won't see any Mekomos Mechusim because you don't have eyes in the back of your head. So I mean, every situation is different. It depends. In some hospitals I've seen in America, they have these curtains, but they never work. If the hospital, you know, this is not a chok lo yavar, this is not a gzeiras hakasav. It's just an eitz hatova. The eitz hatova is if there's no proper tznius, then stand facing your wife's head with your back to her body, and then you can't see anything mekomos mechusin. If then they have other tznius arrangements, then gevaldik, and that's even better. That's wonderful. Then it's more comfortable for everyone. Okay, I think those were all the Shabbos questions. Not that we have much time left. Okay, those are all the Shabbos questions. Now, halachas regarding having kids. At what age do we consider a baby to be chai noseif atzmo, to mean that carrying him is only drabanan? Obviously, that doesn't make it mutter. But I guess in some cases of various hachros, it might make a difference for someone who's lamdan. So I think when they can crawl, when a baby can crawl, he's chai noseif atzmo. Nothing to do with the gedder they say by hachokos, by nida, etc. When the baby can crawl, then he's chai noseif atzmo, and carrying him is only drabanan. When the baby can't crawl, then, even though there is a toast in the beginning of the 19th parak, we normally assume that it's the oraisa. There's an interesting tzitz Eliezer who wants to say no, like we should even be makel to rely on the day of toast that all babies are chai nosei tzatzmo. But, you know, I don't know. I think the more mainstream sock is that only when they can crawl. Now, when chai nosei tzatzmo, that means not only is carrying the baby drabanan, carrying the stroller, pushing the stroller is also drabanan, so the stroller is buttled to the baby. That's a mafurish gemara in Shabbos, that if you take out a living person in a bed, the bed's also only drabanan. But that's only for the stroller, not anything in the stroller. If the stroller has diapers, that's the oraisa. That's for sure, no question about it. So only, if there's only a stroller with a baby, that's all drabanan. But if there's a stroller with diapers and a baby, then that's the oraisa, because the diapers aren't no seif atzmon, and the diapers aren't bottled to the baby. Only the stroller. The diaper he's wearing is, but the other diapers aren't. Only the stroller is bottled to the baby. I guess this could come up. Let's say husbands are machmer and erevin or something, but they'll be making a chai no seif atzmon. That says Eliezer actually likes that idea. Someone once saw my wife pushing a stroller in an erev, and Gez Musser left me in my box a shud of the Tzitz Eliezer, saying how, you know, well, it's, you know, it's chai no seif atzmo, so therefore you should help your wife push the stroller v'chuli v'chuli. Okay. But for sure, if you have a diaper bag or even one tiny little pacifier or something in the stroller, then that takes away the heter chai no seif atzmo. Then you're carrying an inanimate object. How does one balance the desire to be machmer not to use erevins and his wife's desire for help pushing the stroller, etc.? With goodwill and common sense and sound judgment. It's, you know, there's no right or wrong answer in general to this. But the general approach is that, you know, you shouldn't be machmer on someone else's cheshbon. Generally, our masorah is that you shouldn't be machmer on someone else's cheshbon. And, I think the question is exactly, you know, what does that mean? You shouldn't be machmer on someone else's cheshbon. How do you implement that, etc.? You know, what if the wife is proud of the fact that her husband is very machmer, or what if it's really, you know, it's not a big deal. But I think in general, one has to be prepared to compromise some of someone's chumras in order to help your wife and your kids sometimes. What to do in general, does that mean, you know, not everyone has to decide, as everyone has to decide for themselves. But, you know, you can't be ridiculous about your chumras. And everyone has to decide on their own. How should a woman prioritize davening when she is a newborn? It's going to scare all the pregnant women here. So for example, she wakes up at 3 a.m. with the baby, and then the baby falls back to sleep at some later hour. I won't give the example, so as not to scare the faint of heart. She needs to sleep, eat, and daven. What should she do? You know, you have to be realistic. You know, you can't be superhuman. But in general, you know, you could do a quicker davening. You don't have to say every single paragraph. I mean, try to say all 19 and you just want to esrei. But I'm saying, you know, you can skip a verse of it once in a while. So I think in general, it's a good eitzah to daven first, even if it is hard, especially since otherwise you'll never daven, because it's always going to be hard. I even think it's a good etza to daven before you eat. I don't mean like daven for an hour and go to shul, whatever. So daven, even if you have to daven quickly before you eat, you know, or else sometimes the lifestyle is very difficult. Some people have it easier, some people more difficult, but you're going to just abandon davening entirely. So I think it's a good etza to, you know, to daven first whenever possible, even if it has to be not such a great davening and not such a complete davening, because otherwise, you know, then it'll be the next day. But, you know, everyone has to, there's a masorah, they say, the Chafetz Chaim told his wife, she's potter from tefillah till the kids grow up. That's the masorah, they say. So there is a, because osuk mitzvah potter from a mitzvah. So okay, so everyone has their own shitas. But, you know, people whose normal pre-baby, you know, or the kind of newfangled tipus, who are very makbid about davening, v'chule, I think it's worth trying to continue to be makbid about davening, even if you have to sacrifice the quality and quantity of the davening. If you have time afterwards, it's nice to go back and do the rest of Sukkah to Zimra. But it's, you know, it's nice. It's not an emergency.
Holding
a baby. Here it is. Can I or my wife hold the baby while benching or while davening? While davening, it's from a furish shulchan aruch, which is a furish marin brachas. You're not allowed to hold anything while you're davening. It doesn't specifically mention babies, but I assume that it includes babies. You're not supposed to hold anything while you're davening. The Mishnah Berurah assumes it means the whole davening, not just shmoneh esrei. The later svarim, the later hilchos brachas svarim, point out, you know, more contemporary svarim, point out that it's all a matter of what your options are. Meaning, ideally, you know, it's really, you shouldn't hold anything while, or certainly anything delicate, like a baby, while davening is distracting from the davening. So you should, you know, well, maybe the baby will sleep, you'll be lucky, you'll get your husband to hold the baby, etc. However, we have to be realistic. So the contemporary Sfarim all say, you know, the Mishnah Berurah is talking about, even the Mishnah Berurah actually compromised a little, but the contemporary Sfarim all say, that's if you have another option to have better davening. But if your other option is not holding the baby, and then you for sure won't be able to concentrate on davening, then it's better to hold the baby than to be even more distracted by, you know, by the baby screaming and this and that and etc. So it depends. If you have another option of someone else to hold the baby, then you should try to daven not holding the baby. But if your other option is just being even more distracted, you know, they say the same thing for the men with the neshek, etc., right? You can get someone else to hold your neshek, then you shouldn't daven with neshek. Besides the fact that's an even a bigger problem, davening with neshek. But if otherwise you're going to be thinking the whole time about your neshek, then it's better to hold your neshek and not be distracted. So in a lot of situations, it's probably better to hold your baby while davening, because that's better than being even more distracted. But if you have an option of having your baby taken care of, then you should try to do that. What about a carry thing? The Mishnah Berurah doesn't deal with that. But, you know, I think if the baby's quiet in the carry thing, then I don't know if that's very distracting. If the baby's quiet in the carry thing, I think that might be fine. Yeah, even Shmoneh Esrei hold the baby if it's the best option. The carry thing, if the carry thing and the baby's going crazy, then it's going to be hard to concentrate. But if the baby's asleep in the carry thing, then you don't have to concentrate on holding him. And I don't think you have to be machmer. I think that's fine. What about interruption in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei? So the general rule of Shmoneh Esrei is you're not allowed to interrupt except for Pikoach Nefesh, which happens also with kids, although usually they're a little older. You know, you're in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei and you see your 4-year-old, you know, standing on the makkah of the merpeset on the third floor, so then you have to interrupt. But don't think it doesn't happen. But the general rule is you're not allowed to interrupt your Shmoneh Esrei unless the distraction is worse than interrupting your Shmoneh Esrei. So for sure, let's say there's a dirty diaper, then you have no choice but to interrupt your Shmoneh Esrei because you can't keep davening. So you could either go, you know, you could interrupt your Shmoneh Esrei and go someplace else. Or if that's not an option, because let's say the dirty diaper follows you, then you might have to change the dirty diaper, and then it's a whole shiloh whether you have to start again. You often have to start again if it was a dirty diaper. But generally the rule is, if you can finish your Shmoneh Esrei and let the baby cry, it won't kill the baby to cry a few seconds.
I know with the first baby you don't believe me. But if you can't, if it prevents you from focusing on your davening, then it's better to interrupt. It's better to interrupt than to have a worse davening by continuing. But really, you know, it depends what happens. But, you know, it won't kill you if the baby cries for a few seconds. But if you're going to be totally wasting your time davening, then it's better to interrupt and pick up the baby and then continue davening. I don't know. I mean, it could practically, obviously, it's different because the mother usually doesn't have another option. I haven't read anything, but I haven't read any place there's a theoretical difference. Well, there's definitely a practical difference in most cases. So benching and all brachos, they say you're not supposed to do something else while you bench or say other brachos. I haven't found the explicit issue on holding something during benching. So I don't know, I haven't found anyone saying there's also to hold a baby while benching. But you certainly can't play with the baby or do things for the baby.
But aren't there equations with regard to benching in the straight?
Yeah, I don't know. You have to be mayan more. One other very important thing that I have to speak about, if a child is crying during davening, what should one do? So again, if you're home, if you're a stoic, you know, mean kind of ogre and you can do it, then just finish davening and let the baby cry a little. If you absolutely can't daven, then it's better to pick up the baby. In shul, so, and I have to talk about this, the shul, first of all, in general, shul is not a place for babies who might cry. It's really not a place for babies who might cry, not in the men's section, not in the women's section. Okay, in some shuls, they have a crying baby section. That's a different story. In my shul in Yom Naran, they have a special crying baby section. That's fine. You understand what you're getting into. But shul is not a place for babies who might cry. I think even if there's a 10% chance the baby will cry, then I don't think shul is a place for a baby. And if the baby does cry, you have to take him out even in the middle of your Shmoneh Esrei. You can't disturb the whole shul. That's just, you have no right to disturb the whole shul. On the other hand, sometimes babies aren't going to cry. So if babies aren't going to cry, then there's more of a svar to take them to shul. What if a baby's not going to cry, but then starts crying anyway, and it's just a freak occurrence? So if the baby wasn't really supposed to cry, but he starts crying anyways, a freak occurrence, then you have to take him out of shul, even in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei. What to do, I don't know. If you have to push people over, then you're in trouble. But in general, babies in shul is, I don't know. I really think that, at the risk of being mean to women, I really think that if, you know, the mother wants to go to shul, but has a baby who's going to disturb the shul, or even who might disturb the shul, then she and her husband should think of a different creative way of going to shul, and, you know, im tirtzu. If you really want to, the husband can go to one early minyan, the wife to late minyan, or the wife to late minyan, the husband to early minyan, or, you know, someone else could go to early minyan and babysit during shul. So if you have a baby who's not going to disturb, then fine. It's not, you know, there's no tumma of babies in shul. But many babies, certainly at a certain age, they get to the really disturbing age when they're too little to be like just little passive babies, and they're too big to be little passive babies and too little to actually know how to behave. Then you have to come up with some other solution. We didn't get through all the questions, but Ray Miller's giving his hashkafa now. So maybe we will. I'll just answer one more. I'll answer the original ones. Can you be more makel regarding kashrus for your baby, etc., meaning not treif, but not all the proper chumras? I don't know, Reverend Soloveitchik's family, they let the kids eat, non-chol Yisrael till bar bat mitzvah. So I think it depends who. Some people see this a very different way. But I think in our circles we assume that you can be a little more makel on kashrus for kids, certainly if you need to, and even if you don't, just to make them happy. You also certainly have to worry about the social issues and you don't want them to resent it, but in any case, I think you can be a little more makel regarding kashrus for kids. Although it doesn't, you know, everyone has to make their own decision. And if my wife wants to go to a shir and wants me to watch the baby at a time when I could be learning, for example, during night seder, you could always be learning. You don't need examples. What heter is there for me to watch the baby while she learns? So I think there are two answers to this. Number one is that in many cases, if the wife really wants to go to shir and the husband really wants to learn, then they can come up with some creative solution. I was told this by a couple who the husband is one of the biggest Talmid Chacham that I've met. And the wife is one of the more learned women that I've met.
And they said that, you know, the husband should, can do what he wants, the wife can do what he wants, and if you really both want to do it, then you'll get a babysitter. So that's one solution. That's sometimes easier said than done, especially for poor people. But I think the basic answer is, what the heter for the husband to be mevatel Torah to watch the baby for his wife to go to a shiur? So even though theoretically, you know, we say men are chayv in Talmud Torah and women are patur in Talmud Torah, and therefore it wouldn't seem to make sense. There's, you know, there's most of the time, most of the women in this kolal are not quite at that level of asmada where they're always learning all the time lishma for, where they're always learning all the time lishma for the, you know, for the, just to maximize every minute of Torah learning. Rather, learning is just part of general hischaz, you know, there's purely intellectual learning. There's also just hischazkos and avodas Hashem and recharging your batteries and, you know, getting the proper inspiration, etc. So I think that if it's just a matter of maximizing intellectual achievements in Talmud Torah, then that's a really strong philosophical question. But usually that's not the issue. Usually if the two people are so intellectual, they are intellectual enough to figure out, you know, some way to find a babysitter. Usually what happens is the wife wants to go to a shir, because it's chazkos and it's inspiration, and it makes her feel good and recharges her batteries, and then it's really a question of, you know, the husband's learning Torah versus the wife's, you know, emotional and social, and all her friends are at the shir, and she's stuck home all the time and doesn't see her friends. Intellectual and her wife's emotional and social needs, and just to feel like she's using her brain sometimes so she doesn't get depressed, etc. So in these things, I don't know, so, you know, if your, you know, general way of life is that, nope, the husband is always learning and tough luck, then, okay, that's a question. I think in a lot of places, you know, if the, you know, if the husband's learning, the wife says, I'm going crazy, I have to get out of the house, I have to go to the mall, then you have to stay home tonight, you know, for an hour from night seder, I have to get out, I'm going crazy, the husband would stay home and let the wife go to the mall. So, Ashrecha, if your wife doesn't want to go to the mall, the way she meets her intellectual or her emotional needs is by going to a shir. So I think that really the heter is that, you know, people have just needs as a human being, and, you know, if those needs were expressed in a secular fashion, then you would say, well, okay, so I have to miss night seder and learn at home. You don't have to watch TV. I have to learn at home for an hour so that my wife can, you know, so that my wife can feel good about herself. So, kal v'chomer, if the way she does that is by going to a shir, then you should just be very thankful that you have such a holy wife. Okay, there are other questions, but those were submitted a little late, so that's my excuse for not answering that. Okay, and this is...